It's been a long road getting from there to here. It's been a long time.
Hey there! Welcome to Science Friction, the sci-fi comedy game show, where comedians earn points for their opinions and how close those opinions are to my opinions. With us this week, Marley Halperin-Grazer, Josie Campbell. They are comedians that I went to college with. We did a lot of comedy college together, but they have become some of the defining voices in the cartoons that you watch and you love. Say hi, guys.
Hey there.
This is Marley, the other one.
Oh, yeah, yeah, I guess I'm Josie. I'm identifying myself.
I mean, we technically both have women's names, so we have to get out there.
It's very confusing.
You hear them? You hear how awkward it sounds? These are people that hide behind cartoons all day long. They're not comfortable speaking in a microphone. Tell people about some of the cartoons you've worked on. Like, give me the elevator pitch on you guys.
People on Twitter might know me. I'm the new story editor on the reboot of She-Ra, Princess of Power, that DreamWorks is putting together.
Awesome.
And I have worked on, I think, 4 different versions of Scooby-Doo. A couple Tom and Jerry DVDs, and I created my own sketch show that you absolutely have never heard of, people listening to this. It's called Right Now Kapow, and that was the first time you heard those words in that order.
Oh my good. Now, look, here's what I've heard, Marley. Here's what I've heard about Tom and Jerry. I've heard that Tom and Jerry still sells obscenely well worldwide. True or false?
It's incredibly successful overseas, I think, because they don't really talk.
Yes! It's a simple dynamic. They're just running around trying to hit each other and do this and do that. Okay.
Everyone understands that that cat wants to eat that mouse, and that mouse is going to do something horrible to the cat's rear end.
Yeah, it's
mostly how it works.
It's a really universal. Cats want to eat mice, and mice torture cats unceasingly. Like, it's just something that all kids can get behind.
I love it. One of the okay. Two of the biggest international hits ever are Baywatch and Judge Judy. Mm-hmm. And it's because they both, like, Judge Judy makes like $45 million a year today. Because if you're watching it in Uruguay or Paraguay or one of these other countries,
one of the Guays, like,
any of the Guays, if you're in the Guay system, the Guay Polelico, all you see is like a lady yelling at 2 scumbags. It's so easy to get. And then, one of the things I love, and people don't, some people, like, I have a big minion here. A lot of people hate the minions. One of the reasons I love the minions is that they don't speak any language, they speak every language. So, like, if you're a kid in Greece, you don't have to watch, like, some weird dubbed cartoon where you're like, this wasn't made for me originally, this was made for Americans. Like, you're like, oh, look at these cute little guys running around. What do you guys think of the minions?
I'm mostly just fascinated at the fact that the Minions, the Simpsons, SpongeBob, and Pikachu are all the same color.
Like, if you want a hit, I guess that yellow is what you should color something. I guess that's our official professional animation advice.
As animation professionals, I'm interested in the appeal of that shade of yellow.
Yes. Tweety, too. Oh,
yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. And yet, if I wore a suit that was all that color yellow, you'd be like, this is a hitman, this is a murderer, like, there's something wrong with this, there's something wrong with this guy, right? You would do that, right?
I don't know, I think you would look all right. I think you could do it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. We have
okay,
faith.
Okay, that's 10 points from Marley right there, 10
no!
points. What were you going to say, Josie?
I was going to agree with the compliment and say I think you could really pull off a yellow suit, but I feel like those points are gone now.
But would it be 20 like, points for Josie.
Woo!
But would it be like a yellow suit themed as one of those yellow characters, or would you make up your own yellow coconuts?
Yeah, would you be wearing like a yellow Pikachu suit, or is this your own IP that you're creating?
I'm telling you right now, I want to go full-on Man in the Yellow Hat cosplay.
That's true. I guess he's that color. He's significantly less popular than the other yellow
Although
characters.
I was convinced for like a week that that new Rampage movie was a gritty Curious George reboot. Like, very, very convinced that like The Rock was playing the Man in the Yellow Hat, and it took a while for someone to be like, no, that's the video game. This is not a weird Curious George reboot.
Yeah, I haven't looked it up. I know that In the Rampage video game, the monsters are actually humans who have been mutated into monsters, and so they all have normal human names. I assume that ape's name was always George, but it is weird.
Yeah.
Okay, let's talk about the Rampage video game for a second, because this is a very good... Okay, so in the video game, you earn points for destroying the city and killing the military, which is in 2018, and eating, not great.
And eating civilians.
Yeah. It's equal opportunity.
Eating civilians gives you more health, correct?
Yes. Okay. But you don't want to eat the little military guys with the flamethrowers. Then you burn, you spit out fire and take damage.
Does the fire... Okay, hold on. That's another 10 points for Marley for hyper-specific references. Excellent work. Now you're each tied at 20.
I got one more thing. You also don't want to punch a neon sign. That hurts you too.
What?
Just going points? After these points, huh, Marley?
I know a lot about Rampage.
You clearly do. All right, but the flamethrower thing real quick. All right, I eat a flamethrower guy. Mm-hmm. Is there at least like a comical animation of me like burping out flame and it's like, well, I lost some health, but that was funny.
Yeah, I think I believe you do what a cartoon character would do if you ate a spicy pepper.
Okay. Then it's kind of, that's a tough choice for me. Josie, are you going to eat the flamethrower guy knowing that you're going to go through your quarter faster, or are you not going to eat the flamethrower guy? What are you going to do here?
I don't know. I mean, now that it's been described so comically, I might as well.
Yes! Okay, that's another 10 points for Josie. Living on the edge. Okay.
My favorite thing about Rampage is that when you're defeated, you turn back into a little person, and instead of like being arrested or turning yourself in, what you do is hurriedly hide your naked shame and shuffle off screen.
I mean, I always assumed you'd get arrested after you shuffled off. Like, they just saw you revert from a guy who was eating people to a streaker. Like, that you're getting arrested.
Yeah, like, does the giant lizard just ultimately get arrested for indecent exposure because they didn't track that it was a lizard a second ago?
There's a lot of comic business happening in Rampage.
It's criminal that the premise of the movie is not The Rock turns into a giant ape, and then when he turns back, he's like, oh no, I'm naked.
Yes! I would so watch that movie.
Yeah, well, the interesting thing is, we are counting on The Rock to emote about these animals. And that's not the first place you go to when you look for The Rock. You know what I mean? Like, The Rock has seen these animals run around and he's like, oh no, like, oh, my animal friends. Oh, they're being hit by jets. This is bad, but I guess what they're doing is bad too, so I can kind of relate. I'm so torn.
Mm-hmm.
I would rather see The Rock hook out. Marlon's another 10 points. I'm not kidding. You guys are racking up points faster than I think any guests I've ever had. This is really good.
I will begrudgingly admit, I can imagine the conversation that they had when they made this movie, which was that if The Rock turns into a giant Rampage monster, then we've just decided The Rock's not in the most important scenes of this movie. And I get that problem.
Yeah, I can hear that executive note now. It's like, and how much of The Rock are we going to see? Like, 2 minutes? No, that's not okay. We want a full movie of The Rock.
Can you guys tell, because I'm pretty sure you know it, can you guys tell the story about Jim Carrey being that fish?
What? Jim Carrey being a fish? First of all, he's only been one specific fish, not many fish.
Yeah. Wait, what was that?
I don't know what story.
Was he like an animated fish, or is this just like, are you talking about a dream you had? Asterius, you're going to have to give us some context.
Look, it might be both. Because here's what I thought you were referencing when you were talking about like the amount of screen time The Rock would have, which by the way, the way you fix it is The Rock is twins. One is a scientist and one is into nature. Mm-hmm. And so like these two brothers kind of, they've always had disagreements, and then the science one becomes the world's biggest nature, and then the nature one has to help him with the help of science, and then you know,
I feel like then we're like opening a can of worms, because why stop at two? Like, I'm now the whole movie could be The Rock.
I mean,
wait, why stop at two? You're right.
Yeah.
I mean, that is a great solution, but my favorite thing is that you toss that solution off, not as like a clever, funny thing you just thought of, but as like, well, obviously we're joking, but the solution is twins.
Well, no, yeah, I mean, look,
everybody knows that it's. We don't. Let's just say what the entire audience is thinking. They're yelling at their podcast screen. Oh, they should be twins. You idiots. This isn't a good premise. They're obviously twins.
I'm turning this podcast off right now unless they say twins.
You're paying them $20 million and you're getting double the Rock for half the price. I mean, it just makes sense. But here's what I thought you were referencing. Mm-hmm. So apparently Disney was doing a remake of the Fantastic Mr. Limpet. And that's a movie where Don Knotts becomes an animated fish. Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Yeah. Super goddamn pretty. It's like this. The animation is, it's Disney animation, super fucking pretty. And every scene Don Knotts is in where he's not a fish, you're like, I want to see that fish. That fish look cool.
Well, the fish looks like Don Knotts. It's very impressive.
Yes! It's perfect! And so what they did was, they were like, Jim Carrey, we're going to pay you $20 million. You're going to be the new Fantastic Mr. Limpet. And then someone at Disney was like, but we're paying him $20 million. And he's going to be like a fish most of the time? Like, but people want to see Jim Carrey's face. Like, we can't just have him become a fish. You know, kind of like you were saying with The Rock and George.
Oh,
so
yeah.
The solution was, in the 90s, they like CGI'd his head onto a fish. His like live action head was on an animated fish body. And apparently test audiences found it so horrifying that the movie never made it out. There's just all this footage of Jim Carrey's live action head on a fish body hanging out in the Disney vault next to, I guess, Walt Disney's head.
Yeah.
That's really great.
Where all the heads go.
Funny thing about Fantastic Mr. Limpet, I've actually never seen that movie, but the VHS box cover of it is burned into my brain because I must have like deliberately not rented it 100 times as a kid or something. Because I can picture it perfectly on a shelf, and then I can picture me not renting it and renting something else.
I think it's like one of those old Disney movies, like Bedknobs and Broomsticks, that are just on every shelf of every like grandparents' house and Blockbuster in like America. Just like if you were a child, you saw it. You didn't see the whole movie, but you saw that image.
And on the VHS cover, the way they solved that problem is they implausibly had the live action man looking at the fish as if they could exist at the same time.
What?
That's probably why Marley never watched it. The implausibility of a live action man staring at his fish own, doppelganger. His
own fish self, yeah. It's like they're staring each other down like it's going to be a movie about a man meeting a cartoon fish. And that's just false advertising.
The movie like that, for me, that I know but I never saw, is Escape to Witch Mountain. Which, ironically, The Rock was in.
Yeah, the remake of.
What were you saying, huh?
Yeah, the remake of it.
Yeah, Race to Witch Mountain. Did you guys ever see that Witch Mountain movie?
I've seen the
original. Yeah,
I haven't seen The Rock one.
For 20 points, tell me about it.
my understanding is an adult man obtains two magic orphans.
Yes, but they're fraternal twins, yes, I think. So, twins, we're really bringing this full circle.
And they have magic, and he brings them back to Witch Mountain, which is where they came from. And even though I was actually pretty into that movie and watched it a lot, I definitely called it Escape from Witch Mountain every single time.
Well, because that's the that's one of the sequels, right? Is Escape from Witch Mountain?
I just couldn't accept that they were going to Witch Mountain. I just assumed you always go from.
All
Witch
I could
Mountain.
Remember is that they're incredibly blonde, and so that and Children of the Corn I would get mixed up all the time. Oh no, not Children of the Corn. Village of the Damned. That was it.
Yes.
Yeah. So I was like convinced that it was all in the same universe, and that movie scared me a little because of it.
I thought the Children of the Corn were the Village of the Damned. Okay, hold on.
No, Marley, it's
Marley,
two...
20 points. Josie, for 30 points, explain the difference between them.
Okay, Children of the Corn is, there is a creepy, basically, demon in the cornfields that is getting all the children to murder the adults in the town. And then Village of the Dam is, I think that they're either aliens, but that's the movie. Village of the Dam is when all of them have blonde hair and, like, scary blue eyes, and I think they have telekinesis.
Yeah. So they're, like, pod people kids?
Yes, exactly.
So I've only seen, I think one is Village of the Damned and one is Children of the Damned.
Yes.
I've only seen the original black and white version. I forget if that's Children or Village. And then there's a remake that's the other version.
Yeah. Which then the remake was in the 80s, I believe.
So in the black and white one, at least, it's a weird movie. It's, like, everyone in this town, like, passes out for an hour.
Yes.
And then the government shows up to be like, what the hell is going on? And then everyone wakes back up And they're like, oh, well, that was weird. Anyways, let's go on with our lives. And then the movie cuts to like 7 years later.
Yeah. And they, every woman who passed out.
Yeah,
got pregnant and gave birth
to like an identical blonde, creepy child.
Yeah. Yeah. And they all dress the same for some reason.
Yeah, and
which is like not a thing that like is based on the aliens. Like their parents are still dressing them. Theoretically, they could dress them in different outfits.
And the kids, and the kids have definitely telepathy.
Yes.
I forget if they have telekinesis in the original. And then the climax of the movie is actually amazing, is they've decided to nuke the town.
Yes.
To kill the kids, but the kids can read minds, so how do you trick them? So the like main character has to go and he's teaching the kids at school, and the climax of the movie is him focusing on the idea of a brick wall, which keeps the kids from reading his mind, to distract the kids until they can all be nuked to death.
Which again is like, shouldn't have all the children been like, huh, this is weird that our teacher is suddenly thinking about a brick wall real hard. I wonder if this is a cover for something. We know the adults in this town don't like us.
And it's cool. It's cool the way they do it, because if I remember, like, the editing is, it's like the kid's staring at him, asking him like more and more pointed questions as he like struggles to like keep them out of his brain. And then the editing is just like cutting to the image of the brick wall he's trying to focus on.
Yeah. The editing is actually really cool.
It's cool.
And then, yeah. And then, what is it? Children of the Corn is adults basically run out of gas in a small little town. And there is an adult at the gas station, but basically the entire town is children. And the adult basically come in thinking like there's something happened, something's going on, and you find out that the children, led by this main kid who like kind of looks like Cillian Murphy, honestly, just very young, wearing a big like farmer hat, have been killing all of the adults and sacrificing them to the what is it, God who walks behind the stalks? I'm trying to remember the name of the
I don't know, the
demon
as well.
It was the God in the something like that. They're basically, there's a demon in the cornfield that they've been sacrificing everything to, and the only way the adults get out is these like two kids basically turn turncoat on their cult leader and help them burn down the like main like scarecrow idol that the demon was inhabiting while the kids are about to sacrifice the adults, and then like the cornfield burns down and they get out of here.
Oh my God. Okay.
Actually, this occurs to me. Asterios, have you've not seen these movies because you still won't watch horror movies.
Oh,
right?
That's still true.
I need to award Josie another 30 points because you did a really good job describing the difference between them. But B, no, here's the thing. I just like to hear what happened in horror movies so that way I don't have to watch them. Because like now I can be at a party and I can be like, and like if someone brings in like a little blonde toe-headed pair of twins, they'd be like, hey, check out the Village of the Damned twins over here. Hey guys, I hope you better start thinking about a brick wall. So I don't have to, and like I can just like reference stuff. Like I just want the references.
So you want to be able to reference things so people with children think you're an asshole?
Yes. Well, A, don't trust your kids like that. Don't trust your kids like Hansel and Gretel and have them walk around. Like that's more of a look at me thing than a look at them thing. You're gonna screw these kids up. And don't name them like Apple and Cyrano. Like, be cool, guys. The other day, my coworker had a baby, and I'm like, "What'd you name the baby?" And he goes, "Mike." And I go, "Thank God, because my name's Asterios, and it's difficult. It's a difficult." And thank God, like I just happen to have ethnic parents, not like fucking weird look at me parents, but it's just like,
well, yeah, like
look, if anyone's the moral of the story is like, name your kid Tim or something. Like, I don't know, Marley, what do you think?
Well, I mean, Asterios isn't a weird name, it's just Greek.
Yes, well, that's, well, oh, but it's difficult. I'm not saying it's weird, I'm just saying, like, look, it makes stuff a little harder. Mm-hmm. Well, your name's Marley, and you were named after Bob Marley, am I correct?
I was. My parents named me after Bob Marley. Honestly, the name isn't I actually have the other thing that can be annoying, which is that my parents spelled my name wrong on purpose, and that is the only part that is annoying. Being named Marley is fine, but they spell it M-A-R-L-Y, which means everyone, including my immediate relatives, spell it M-A-R-L-E-Y. Which, I mean, they're right. That is how Marley is spelled. But it's not how my name is spelled. So that is my only, I don't have any complaint about the name. I just wouldn't mind if it had been spelled the normal way.
No, I see. Okay, you get it. Josie, you're so lucky. Your name is Josie Campbell.
Yeah, but like,
that's like a bite of an apple. It's so crisp and clean.
I get a lot people, especially in Los Angeles, thinking my name is Jose and I'm an idiot who've spelled it wrong. Especially with like all of my credits. They're like, oh yeah, Jose, you wrote Batman. Jose, you wrote on Justice League Action.
Wait,
like, surely.
Wait, no, slow. You wrote Batman?
Well, for Justice League Action and for some shorts.
Tell every... For 30 points. Just talk about Batman. This is like a nerd show. Tell me what you made Batman do and what it's like to write for Batman. Like, give me the Batman experience.
So it is actually very easy writing for Batman because you know what Batman sounds like. It's Kevin Conroy. And for Justice League Action, they hired him again. So my episode specifically that I wrote that is all him and Blue Beetle is called Timeshare. And it is Batman and Blue Beetle have to go back in time because a supervillain, Kronos, is trying to kill Batman, young Batman, when he's out on his very first ever mission to take down the Falcones. Which was super fun to write and also super fun because I was working for Alan Burnett at the time, who had written and produced Batman the Animated Series. So I would say it was very easy to write for Batman because I would write a script and I'd send it into Alan and then he'd give me a call. He'd be like, okay, change all these lines to exactly these lines I would write. I'm like, yep, will do, sir. Here's the script.
I've only written a little bit of Batman that was produced, but my favorite thing I did is I wrote what was going to be a video tie-in to Arkham City. They wound up turning
what?
They wound up
the video game Arkham City.
Yeah.
They wound up turning it into a comic, actually. So it looks like I've written one Batman comic, but that's because they gave my video script to a comic book writer and had them adapt it.
That is goddamn cool.
So when I wrote, that video was going to be a video for, and it was Alan Burnett producing. And I got my favorite note I've ever gotten from Alan, and it was about how I wrote Batman. He said that on my first draft, he said that my Batman A sounded too much like Adam West, and
what?
And B, he said that I wrote Batman too liberal.
What?
Because in Arkham City, spoilers for an old video game, Catwoman is also at odds with the villain. She's also running up against Hugo Strange. And so my video is about Batman, like, basically grabbing Catwoman before she can get grabbed by the bad guys. And I had him say, like, I'm going to get you. And she's been committing crimes. But so I had him say, like, I'm going to get you out of town until all this is over. And Alan was like, no, you can't do that. He has to say he's taking her to the feds.
To the fence?
The feds.
Oh, the feds.
Because it's like law enforcement in Gotham has been corrupted, so we can't take him. So my idea was, well, you can't trust the new Arkham Asylum. It's evil. So he's just going to get her out of town. And Alan was like, no, he can't let her go. He has to say he's like taking her to the FBI.
Okay, I will say
actually a note Alan gave me too.
Really?
On the Superman script that I wrote, where at the end, like, they, like, he was like, okay, you have to very specifically have them say they're arresting them and taking them to police. I'm like, why? He's like, I don't know, maybe they'll kill them, who knows. And I'm like, okay.
I will say this, that it, that does, I look, I'm a guy that gets known to all the time. I disagree with him, but a lot of times it's like, nah, look, I'm getting paid. I'll do whatever you want, kid. Like, you know, usually the notes are being given to me by one of the children in the corn. But but I will say this, like, Batman's a real stickler.
Yeah.
You do kind of get the sense that he'd be like, I get that you're trying to help, but I'm bringing you to jail because that's what... Because I'm Batman.
Yeah.
Like he loves that stuff where he's like, crime doesn't... I don't know. But I'm telling Batman to people who write Batman. The Falcons.
When you said it that way, I just remembered what my line was that he marked as to Adam West.
What was it?
Pretty proud of.
I don't know about that one.
So it was he basically like sleep gassed Catwoman and then she wakes up in the Batmobile and he's like, you know, I'm taking you out of the city, whatever. That's not how Kevin Conroy talks at all. Conroy has a good Batman voice.
That is the voice that both of us do when we're like reading through our scripts to ourselves. I'm like, Batman, this is not a game, Blue Beetle.
it's really impossible not to do this voice because it's funny to do that voice, even though the good Batman don't do that voice.
Yeah. No.
But she's in the Batmobile, and then I have her basically activate the ejector seat and eject herself out of the Batmobile.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's great.
And so that stayed in. But what I had Batman say, which Alan dinged, was I had him go, I think he said, either I never should have told her about that button, or I never should have installed that button.
Those are both, those are both good lines.
Did he just cut the line entirely?
Yeah.
I did get to, because that project was more serious. Yes. We got away with a lot more jokes on Justice League Action, because I did a short that was like Batman and Stargirl fighting, and at the end of the short, it was like Cyborg and like Toyman are getting along. So I did get to have Kevin Conroy say the line, "I'm just going to leave and pretend this day never happened."
Okay. But I could see that. That's a tweener of a line, though. Because, like, you know, because sometimes in that Bruce Timmiverse stuff, bullshit would be happening, and Batman would just be like, "I hate everything I'm seeing right now. This is all so stupid."
That's always my favorite episodes of, like, BTAZ. We're always, like, when Batman's, like, just, like, you know he's going to go home and just make himself a drink and, like, shake his head.
Especially once it was Batman on the Justice League.
Oh,
especially,
yeah.
Justice League Unlimited, there were some pretty jokey episodes, and you always got the impression Batman
he
was,
like... sang. Like, yeah. There was an episode where the way he won the day was he, like, had to sing like a lounge song, like to like Zatanna.
That's definitely like, and this fits in well when we start actually talking about Star Trek. Definitely Batman sang in one episode because Kevin Conroy must be good at singing, and he must have been saying like, "Hey guys, just so you know, I'm really good at singing. If you ever need Batman to sing," and for 8 years they're like, "We are never going to need that, Kevin. Stop suggesting it." And then eventually they figured out a way to work it in.
But could that be the episode where he went up against Neil Patrick Harris's Music Master guy? Yes or no?
I believe Music Meister was invented for Batman Brave and the Bold, which was years later.
Yeah, it was not the same episode.
Okay. Wow, so, there's two, like, so, singing.
Yeah, so by the time he fought Music Meister, it was Diedrich Bader doing it.
Yeah, so it wasn't Kevin.
Who I love. Under Diedrich Bader, A... running away with every episode of the Drew Carey Show, just running away with it.
Yeah.
That guy's so great. He's so good in Office Space. And then overlooked Batman.
Yeah, his Batman's good.
Yeah, I think so. People just get so hung up on Kevin just because he, like, did it for so long. But yeah, no, Diedrich Bader is a great Batman.
Yeah, so Diedrich Bader, it's funny. He's staked out his claim as he's goofy 60s Batman now. Because when they did, they just recently did the Brave and the Bold Diedrich Bader Batman meeting Scooby-Doo. and so they did that, so that's a DVD that came out just recently.
Okay. God damn. So how many, okay, for 50 points, how many Batmen have Scooby-Doo and Shaggy and the gang met? And tell me them and walk me through the list.
Ooh.
I think this is actually going to be really simple. I think they have met animated Adam West.
Yes, they have.
Voiced by Adam West. Yep. And then they met Brave and the Bold, voiced by Diedrich Bader.
And I think those are the only two, because Batman the Animated Series, BTAZ, was not really going over with anything. Like, and nobody remembers Beware the Batman. So, yeah. I think those are the only two. It's Adam West and Diedrich Bader.
I think the only time Batman gets to meet Scooby-Doo is when it's a 60s style Batman.
Yeah, when it's a goofy Batman. Yeah. The serious Batman don't meet Scooby for some reason.
Who would have... Wait, Beware the... Okay, by the way, Marley, you're at 130 points. Shows you're at 110. Very good job, keep
so up. Close.
Well, you okay, look. When we get to Star Trek, the points value will double. But, okay, Beware the Batman. That's another thing nobody talks about. Tell people about Beware the Batman.
Beware the Batman, and this is one that neither of us worked on.
Yeah, so we can be mean about it.
We can be super mean about it. It was Glenn Murakami, actually.
Yeah, who's a super amazing, phenomenally talented producer, director.
The guy who basically brought back Teen Titans, not Teen Titans Go, but the original, the 90s Teen Titans.
2000s.
2000s?
Yeah, 2000s.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
But that, if you picture in your head, like 2003 Teen Titans Robin, that's Glenn Murakami's style. Yes. That's his style.
So Glenn Murakami got the chance to basically reboot Batman, as you get to do basically every couple of years, because Batman and Scooby-Doo is how Warner Brothers stays in business.
Yeah, essentially essentially everyone who was like a big time director on Batman the Animated Series gets to do their own Batman at some point.
Yes.
Wow.
It's just like it's seniority.
Batman Brave and the Bold was James Tucker.
Yep.
And then Where the Batman was Glenn Morcombe. Yep. And Justice League Action, which wasn't specifically just Batman, was Butch.
Butch. Oh, his last name. Yeah. No, I know who you're saying, and I am
Lubchick.
Lubchick. I can't remember.
Anyway, big Russian guy. And that was Justice League Action was his chance, but all those guys were like the big directors on animated series.
Yeah, so Glenn Murakami was making it, was CG, right?
Yeah,
CG Batman show that did pretty poorly, and I think probably slightly unfairly, but also slightly fairly, before they could really like try to pull it back. Like Cartoon Network essentially buried it. Like it aired like every single episode at like 3 a.m.
Yeah, it came out. It was a. There was sort of a unfortunate period of Warner Brothers Animation where we had basically three action shows. They had Young Justice, Green Lantern, the Animated Series, and Beware the Batman. And then the market for action shows just disappeared overnight.
Oh, it dried up.
And suddenly, basically, Adventure Time was a huge hit, and then all anyone wanted was a goofy comedy like Adventure Time. And all the action shows just disappeared, which has left Warner Brothers with basically only Teen Titans Go. And then they've been like rebuilding up from there, and now they're making they're making a ton of shows, more shows than ever. But for a second there, it was a little grim because we'd put all our eggs in the action basket, and then the action basket got set on fire and thrown off a cliff.
Well, and then aired at 3 a.m. on Cartoon Network. Like I think it was like over the course of a week, they aired every single episode, starting at like 1 a.m. just like burning through them, so they could contractually say they aired them.
Because I mean, without pretending I know all of the thinking behind these decisions, because I don't. I don't believe the plan at Warner Brothers Animation was to switch over to just Teen Titans Go. They thought they could make Teen Titans Go and some cool action shows all at the same time, and then the action shows just all got canceled, and we were left with Teen Titans Go.
I gotta say, I really like Teen Titans Go. I'm watching an episode the other day, and it's like the Magic Girl and Wilson Slade's daughter.
That's the episode I wrote.
Oh, wait, hold
are
on.
You
let me finish
about...
talking. Josie, let me finish mansplaining your work to you before you dive in. Because, okay, listeners, I swear to God. Well, okay, I don't know what's. I literally don't know what is about to happen. Like, I was just going to say this because I was talking to my friend Joan Ford, comedian, about this the other day. Because we were talking about Teen Titans Go. And I'm like, I'm sitting with my nieces. We're in Astoria, which is where it's a Greek place.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, what do you want to watch? I'm like, oh, let's watch Teen Titans Go. And I'm watching this episode, and it is so clear that the Magic Girl and, like, dead Deathstrike's daughter are on, like, a 1990s lesbian date. And, like, Robin is, like, the cis white guy who's like, I'm going to put you guys in jail. Like, you're committing crimes. And they're like, being gay isn't a crime. We're going to go to the carnival. Like, did you write that episode?
Wait, I'm trying to remember because Rose Wilson shows up in two different episodes. One I wrote, and that one's Cool School. And that's when, like, she's impressed. I mean, all of the episodes where she shows up and is like a 90s lesbian, like, rom-com. But
yes.
The episode that I wrote, and I think I know which one you're talking about. It might be a different one. The episode I wrote is they are supposed to apprehend Rose Wilson, but she keeps making quips, and, like, Raven thinks she's the coolest person ever.
Yes.
And, like, breaks her out and, like, hangs out with her while, like, Robin and the others try to, like, figure out how to be cool and go through cool school to try to impress Raven again and get her back on their side.
Oh, you wrote that episode?
I did.
Okay, yeah, I really like that episode. I was telling Joan all about it. Joan didn't mention at all that you wrote it. I was like, you gotta see this episode. Okay.
I don't know if Joan knows. It's the only episode of Teen Titans Go I wrote for, so... Wow, I feel like, and this isn't like an ask or anything, but I feel like that deserves some points that we're on the same wavelength here.
You know what, actually?
Is asking for points a points deducting offense?
You see, I don't think so, because me and my best friend Asterios, we like the same things, Marley, and those things are the things that I write.
Now, I will say this, traditionally, grade grubbing is not allowed, but... I'm ending this episode because this is going so hot. We're going to do a double episode. Josie, you definitely win the game this week. You just got 200 points and the game.
Woo!
Leaving it at 310, Josie, 130, Marley. Congratulations, Josie Campbell. You're the winner of Science Friction this week.
Yay!
Okay. Now, I want to wrap things up. It seems like this whole episode has kind of been a plug about your guys' work, but would you care to plug your work?
Sure. Like I said, I'm working on the reboot of She-Ra that DreamWorks is putting out. It's going to be on Netflix in the fall, I believe. I'm not sure if they've actually announced when it is going to be, but the first 13 episodes will be dropping on Netflix this year, so stay tuned.
And I have written two feature-length things for Warner Brothers, and I'm producing two different shows, and I can't tell you about any of them.
That's fine. You're cool. Just so, you like this guy's stuff.
Yeah, everybody look out for Marley's NDAs.
Yeah, exactly.
I think. All right, guys. Keep going. Sorry, oh, no, cut you off.
I was just gonna go. I think next year it's gonna look like I was the busiest person in the world, but it's because I did it all 2 years ago.
Isn't that always the way? And isn't this always the way that we're out of time? Thank you guys so much for listening to Science Friction. If you guys want bonus episodes or early episodes, I mean, you do get both. It's not a choice. You go to patreon.com/Asterios. And, I'm just burping up all this low-carb beer I'm drinking. Thank you guys so much. Energize. All right. Let's all stop tape before everything gets ruined.
Yeah.
Change my mind.